You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. I am John Corrales, one third of the Reigning Jays. I am on RedsArmy.com and Boston.com. If you haven't read any of my stuff, that's where you can find it. I'm also RedsArmy_John on Twitter. If you're a first-time listener, please follow me and my shenanigans online. I am here alone today because I have spoken to Locked On Wizards host Noah Getzel about the Tuesday night game against the Wizards. A huge game, I think, because the Celtics are trying to keep the Wizards at bay. The Wizards are, as we record this, the eighth seed. They're going to stay there at least until that game on Tuesday night. The Milwaukee Bucks are playing the Orlando Magic. It is currently, as I am speaking, halftime, so we'll see if the Bucks can win and increase their lead over the Wizards. If they do that and they get to 44 and 27, and the Celtics can win and push the Wizards down to 42 and 39, then there will be two games separating the Bucks and Wizards going into the final game, and that is just not enough time to make up the gap. So the Tuesday game is a very important game for Boston. That would avoid the Wizards matchup, and I have said multiple times, I do not want to play the Wizards in the first round. I want to play the Bucks. I want the Bucks in the first round. The Heat, I will accept the Heat, but I want the Bucks, Heat, and then Wizards are my third choice. I've said that. I said that on last night's show with Jay King, so that is my preference. So, with that, here is my conversation with Locked On Wizards host Noah Getzel. Okay, so Noah, Celtics Wizards Tuesday night. This is kind of a big game, the last big game of the season. If the Wizards win, they have a very high likelihood of getting into that seventh seed, which I think you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll depend on the Bucks' shoulders. I think they have, I've got to double check. I think they might have one more tough game, but the Wizards definitely would benefit from playing the Celtics in my mind instead of the Raptors at this point in the season.
Yeah, the Bucks play the Sixers on the last game of the season. So depending on where that whole thing sits with them and the Cavs, might determine how tough a game that is for them. It's a big game for the Celtics, because I want the Celtics to win that game, because that will make it much more likely that the Wizards will stay in eighth, and I don't want to play the Wizards. But let me throw this out at you. Everybody has been saying, well, not everybody, because some people aren't as afraid of the Wizards. I say, with Marcus Smart out for at least most of the first round, we found out Monday that he could come back towards the end of the first round. But without Kyrie, without Marcus Smart, against Wall and Beal, no matter how much they're struggling, I still think I don't want to play the Wizards. However, the Wizards have really been struggling. Losses to the Hawks, to the Bulls, to the Pistons in the last couple of weeks. You beat the Hornets, but losses to the Rockets and Cavs are understandable. But the loss to the Cavs after John Wall ran his mouth, that's not encouraging either. So how confident are you really going into the playoffs? Do you think playing the Celtics is just that's our best chance at getting out of the first round? Or do you feel confident about the Wizards no matter what?
I thought everything was cool after that 4-point loss to the Cavaliers, because even though they gave up I think it was a 17-point advantage in the final 7 minutes. It showed that they can go toe-to-toe with the perennial best team in the East. And then the next day, I guess, you know, it's the next game of back-to-back. You don't have John Wall anymore. But the Wizards just absolutely stunk against the Hawks in the next game. And it was so terrible that nobody wanted to talk to the press after the game. Scott Brooks is saying all the time, this is embarrassing. Everyone played selfish on defense in terms of not boxing out, not communicating, not doing help defense on screen and rolls. And it just seems like the Wizards take amounts of time or entire games off. So that's not really a habit that you can get rid of in the playoffs. And we saw it last year against the Celtics. They would go up by, you know, 10, 15, 20 points in the first half. And then all of a sudden, I don't know, the Celtics would turn on the D or something, and it would just be a tied ball game all of a sudden. So I think the Wizards have a lot of bad habits, which they can't fix in two games. And going back to your original question, which I forgot, what did you say again?
Well, I was just wondering, like, see, for me, I was saying I feel more afraid of the Wizards than any of the last three teams. But, you know, honestly, if I'm giving you some truth serum here, should the Celtics, should teams really be afraid of the Wizards in the first round of the playoffs? And do you feel like the Wizards need to play the Celtics because that's their best chance because the Celtics are injured? Or do you feel any bit of confidence with Wall coming back and maybe getting into a groove in the playoffs and it doesn't matter who they face?
I feel confident about two of the four teams that they would potentially face. Let's go ahead and say three. The only team that I definitely don't want the Wizards facing would be the Cavs, because nobody beats LeBron in the first round in the past decade. But I think the confidence against the Raptors would come from that 2014-15 series when the Wizards swept. And I was joking on the podcast yesterday that the Wizards need to just sign Paul Pierce again to like a 10-day contract or the rest of the season, just for that swagger factor. The Celtics, a lot of people are really discounting the Celtics unfairly so. I still think the Celtics have an edge over the Sixers just from the experience factor and coaching edge. Even though the Sixers have won 14 in a row, I think it's totally different when you get into a playoff setting and those players aren't experienced. They're going to turn the ball over. They're going to have mistakes. And everyone's saying now, oh my God, like the Sixers are going all the way to the finals. No, they're not going to get past.
That's
the
ridiculous.
It's just, you know, another one of those ESPN SportsCenter fodder type things, you know, saying like, oh, you know, the last team to not make the playoffs and then get into the finals was, I think it was actually your Celtics in 2007, 2008. Oh, no, it was the Cavs once they got LeBron back. But I think the Celtics are an incredibly difficult matchup. And even though they haven't been great offensively, a team that can just stifle you and frustrate you so bad. Like, when you're not able to score, the Wizards have shown over and over that when they're not, they just refuse to play defense because they're upset. So it's the best situation I can think of, just because, you know, you don't want to face the number one seed. If you're the 8 seed, you have the statistically lowest chance of advancing and moving on. But, yeah, I'm not scared of the Celtics, but I definitely would respect them. When it comes to the teams in the Eastern Conference, playing the Cavs would be the ultimate worst situation, which, you know, the only way that would happen is if the Wizards win twice and Miami loses twice. So it's very, very slight odds there. And do you think at this stage, like, what's your confidence level with the Celtics? Are they going to win two rounds or just one? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I feel like it really depends on the matchups. Again, the Wizards are not the team I want to face just because of that backcourt. And as much as Washington has been struggling, the backcourt scares me. No Kyrie, no Marcus Smart to start. Marcus Smart, we learned on Monday, he's targeting the end of the first round. So if the Celtics can keep it alive, then they can, you know, Smart can come in and make a difference in the series potentially if they face the Wizards. I don't fear the Bucks as much. I fear the Miami kind of like in between Milwaukee and in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Celtics, and this is why I wanted you on now, because this Tuesday night game is so important. If the Celtics can win this game, then they can make it basically almost impossible, I think, depending on what Milwaukee does, almost impossible for the Wizards to get that seventh seed. So this win is huge for the Celtics if they can get it. And if they win, and if Philly gets into that third seed, I feel good. I feel good about going against whomever comes out of that. And I say it that way because I'm not 100% sure that Philly comes out in a first round series, even if they play the Heat or if they pay the, well, it would have to be the Heat because Indiana is pretty solidified in that fifth seed.
Oh yeah.
So I wouldn't be shocked if Philly lost to the Heat because the matchups are okay. You know, Whiteside against Embiid, they've had their battles. I wouldn't be surprised just because Philly is so raw. And like you said, that first round, that the playoffs are so much different than the regular season. And Philly's record has gotten fat on a lot of really, really, really bad teams. They've beaten good teams. I'm not going to take that away from them. But everybody has acknowledged that Philly's end of season schedule has been the biggest cupcake in the world. So, but good for them for going on that run. You win 14 in a row. You deserve the credit. Fine. But if they do get past Miami or whomever, I still feel good about the Celtics going up against Philly. Al Horford has done a really good job against Embiid. I think Marcus Smart against Ben Simmons is a pretty good matchup because Simmons doesn't take jumpers. Marcus Smart's one of the best defenders in the league, and he's strong. You can't muscle your way by him. So I think he can at least limit Simmons. And then from there, it's a matter of figuring out how to stop some of their shooting with Saric and Redick. And I think the Celtics can at least make that a very, very tough series. So even with all of their injuries. So I still see a road potentially with all of the injuries still. If things pan out right, that the Celtics could still get to the conference finals. Now, if they get to the conference finals, I think is where the magic might run out. But you know,
yeah.
But I still feel okay about that. But it all hinges on this Tuesday game. So let me ask you: Tuesday night, TNT, Celtics, Wizards. Do you see both teams kind of going all out? Do you see this as almost like game one of an 8-game series between these teams?
Yeah, for sure. John Wall's playing. He's probably going to get logged close to 40 minutes. And as he said before the Cavaliers game, I think, who was it? The Wizards lost to the Rockets. And he said, okay, I'm playing, you know, the game against the Cavs, the game against the Celtics to send a message to both those teams. Of course, the message failed a little bit against the Cavs. You know, the Wizards showed they could compete. But he's going to definitely treat this as a playoff game. And going back to that preview of the matchup, potential, you know, looking down the road, if the Celtics were to face Philly in the second round, I think another advantage you have is slowing down the pace, especially when you're going against a younger team. So the Sixers are best when they're running out in transition. You know, Simmons grabs a rebound, he goes coast to coast, he feeds someone for a three, he finds Embiid or something like that. But when you know, the Celtics are a team that really likes playing at a slower pace, and I think that's going to benefit them because their defense will stop a lot of those transition opportunities. And if it comes down to, you know, Brad Stevens' Celtics offense versus the offense that would largely be reliant on Embiid going toe-to-toe with Horford and scoring in the post every time or hoping someone cheats over to get a three-pointer, I like the Celtics' odds there.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm very comfortable with the Celtics against the Sixers. I just don't trust the Sixers to get that far or to finish off a second round series. Like, they might get past the first round on talent, but I just don't see them getting beyond that. That experience is a big deal. Like, getting into a second round and a third round of the playoffs is, that's tough to do. It's tough to understand exactly what changes in the playoffs until you get there. And yeah, the Sixers have veterans that can kind of tell them, but their veterans aren't their best players. And with the Celtics, Al Horford is still there, and you can rely on him in those moments to kind of take people aside and say, okay, here's what's going to happen. Al Horford is still very, very good. So he can calm guys down. The Celtics have, you know, Marcus Morris, who is, you know, a long tenured veteran. I'm still concerned about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You know, Brown has gotten some playoff experience. He sees it. He's seen it. He knows it. Tatum hasn't, but I think with all of the attention that's going to be paid on the other guys, that's going to be different than what the Sixers are going to face, what Simmons is going to face, what Embiid is going to face. They just don't know. They don't get it. Now, their talent is super, super great, so they're going to get past it somehow, but if they start pressing, they'll start making some mistakes, and it's much easier for a rookie's mistakes to cascade out of control. So
you talked about Marcus Smart as essentially like the second coming of Jesus, and how big of a difference does he make? Because it's, you know, Boston people are saying all the time, like, oh, you know, like we're ravaged with injuries right now. Kyrie's not going to be in the playoffs, but once we get Marcus Smart back, you know, we'll be fine. Like everything's going to be clicking again. I feel like his biggest benefit is the way that he just like dies for loose balls or skies in for offensive rebounds that are just more demoralizing than anything else. And John Wall used to say that Avery Bradley on the Celtics was the toughest defender that he faces all season. But it was really a gang effort between Smart getting under his skin, literally like scratching up his arms, getting under that skin. But what kind of impact do you think he makes on the game? Because he's truly a head case and a very unreliable offensive player.
Marcus Smart is much more than what you said. So defensively, he's obviously, I think, everybody can agree that he's a very good defender. He also has tremendous instincts, and he finds his way to the ball. It's not just hustle or, you know, oh, he just snags this crazy rebound. There's a lot of that. There's very much Marcus Smart just kind of being crazy and diving and that stuff. But Marcus Smart as a defender is very smart. No pun intended. He is, he anticipates things. He knows everybody's plays. He plays with a certain energy that raises everybody's game.
Yeah.
You know, that when there are times on the floor where somebody might be kind of slacking a little bit, Marcus Smart comes in and plays with such an energy that you look like a jackass if you're not matching him. So you have to match him out there. So, but beyond that, Marcus Smart is actually, I think, a very good point guard in that he understands what's happening. He runs a pick and roll very, very well. He runs the pick and roll with Al Horford extremely well. When Marcus Smart and Al Horford end up running pick and roll, Marcus Smart throws these alley-oops in the lane that consistently connect with Al Horford and others, but mostly Al Horford. It just sucks that Daniel Tice is hurt because Tice was the recipient of a lot of these too. But offensively, everybody wants to focus on Marcus Smart's shooting, which we all know sucks generally, but he can pass very, very well. Marcus Smart is a very underrated passer. He knows how to get the ball, where to get the ball, and when to get the ball to certain spots on the floor. And like I said, he, as a point guard, he can run an offense. He can run an offense. He is a starter worthy point guard, I think, in the NBA, even though his money will be made on the defensive end, but he is a very underrated passer and he can run the offense. So it's very, very important for the Celtics to have that, because if they decide to start Marcus Smart, and then they probably will whenever he's healthy against the Wizards, if they face the Wizards in the playoffs, that pushes Terry Rozier, another starter level point guard in the NBA, to the bench. And now you have, or you can play them together sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that really, really helps. And I think ultimately why I'm so confident is that Brad Stevens knows how schematically to get everybody together and get them to click and get them to work and maximize everything that these guys can do well. And, you know, Brad Stevens gets a little bit of shit for his playoffs. I don't know, early on, he overachieved so much in the regular season that when he got to the playoffs, it didn't go well. they should have never gone to the playoffs that first year they did under him.
Right.
I think he's done a very good job in the playoffs coaching. So, but I'm confident. This is why the Celtics fans are so confident with Marcus Smart coming back. Because he just changes the entire dynamic, and you just elevate him to the top, and you push some of these guys who've been working so hard, you push them down onto the bench, and that really just helps you come playoff time.
I think it's a very similar situation with John Wall, because he's the type of guy who, when the Wizards are out there clicking and getting, you know, steals and turnovers and blocks and transition easy buckets, they're absolutely unstoppable. I don't care which defense you are, you know, they can do that against Golden State. They can do that, probably not the Spurs, but just about anyone else. And it's kind of just the tone that Wall sets in terms of the pace of the game. The issue is I've never seen Marcus Smart take a playoff, whereas John Wall will take, you know, half a quarter, an entire quarter, something like that off. So it's just a different atmosphere. The Wizards are great when they're in sync, but, you know, a lot of this season they have not been there whatsoever, and there have been a whole slew of issues. And I was wondering, from an outside perspective, you know, you get these text messages from Marcus Morris going to his twin Markieff after they lose against like the Hawks and guys like that, and he just texts, what the hell are you doing? What are you guys doing? From your perspective, what's wrong with the Wizards, and can they still win a playoff series, or is it too deep that, you know, it's just, I don't know, is it immaturity? Is it lack of ability to have team chemistry? Is the team not composed well in terms of the organization and the roster? What do you think has been the biggest weakness when you discount just John Wall's injury this year?
Well, you know, I feel like there's still, I don't know, maybe some coaching issues that are going on here. I'm curious to see what the players really think of playing with Wall. It's not that I certainly don't think the Wizards are better without Wall, but I wonder if there's some things that Wall can do to kind of make it easier to play with him. He clearly he's not a great shooter, but you know, I just wonder if there are some things, you know, some similarities maybe to Russell Westbrook in that he may have, there may be a little bit of difficulty playing with him. So you saw early on when he was out, the ball move a lot more. I've defended the Wizards in that I don't think the ball movement without Wall is necessarily completely indicative of that being better offense. I think when Wall is so good, and you got a player that's so good in John Wall, if without him, you have to move the ball more to get your shots. Whereas Wall is so good, he can just get you shots. That,
right.
You know, so you have to have that ball movement to create some of those things. But at the same time, the ball movement gets other people involved, and there's like a good and a bad side to both of these things. With Wall, there may be a tendency to just sit there and watch him cook and
hope you get a corner three or something like that.
Yeah, and maybe some of these guys, maybe Porter, maybe Oubre, they need to be a little bit more involved. They need more touches. So as great as Wall can be individually, I think he needs to also understand that some of these other guys, they just need touches to get the feel of the game. And when you get the ball in your hand, even if you get it and you're moving and you move the ball, you just feel more into the game as opposed to standing there and just like, all right, well, hopefully the defense collapses on John, because then he can pass it out to me and I'll shoot. But I think the guys that you have, Porter, Oubre, Beal, I think attitude-wise, I think they might get a little frustrated with that, because they're all really good. Like, Beal is a tremendous player. Porter can be really good. Oubre is really good, really good young player.
If only he could make a shot in the past 2 weeks or whatever.
Right. But, like, if you feel like you're really good, but you're watching a guy who's also really, really good, and you're like, come on, dude, just give me the ball. I want to do something more than catch and shoot. I want to create too. I want to dribble. I want to pass. I want to do like other things. So I think the construction of this team, the youth is both a good and bad thing, because I think they get a little frustrated with how things are going. And when I started out with the coaching, I just think that it's more on the coach to create situations where those other guys are getting their touches. Like maybe you sub Wall out a little earlier and you just stagger him a little bit more and let those other guys kind of create a little bit more. This way, when it comes down to the fourth quarter, everybody's a little bit more aware and ready to perform rather than, you know, kind of wait and look around and see. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys have had some problems finishing games, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for the record, since February 28th, your squad is 11-7, including a 6-game winning streak. The Wizards have the lowest winning percentage of any playoff team right now, just 6-13, which is something like 30%. So it's not been pretty at times, that's for sure. For me, I think on Tuesday, the biggest concern and struggle will mostly depend on the front court of the Wizards, but also the coaching decisions in terms of stopping Al Horford. And he's not, you know, a guy who's going to try and score 25 points or anything like that. But I think just defending his perimeter abilities is not something that Marcin Gortat or Jan Mihimny will do. And so we'll see how quickly Scott Brooks goes to a smaller lineup where Markieff Morris is guarding Horford instead. And that's the biggest key matchup in my mind. What do you think will determine the outcome of this game?
I completely agree, because that was what swung the series for the Celtics last year, was Al Horford being able to take out Gortat and just basically completely render him useless. Gortat's biggest strength against the Celtics is being able to crash the board and take advantage and get some offensive rebounds and really blow up. Yeah, the Celtics are the number one defensive team, but if you can go in there and get offensive rebounds, then you can really turn them into a mediocre defensive team, because that's not getting a stop and you're getting putbacks and you're drawing fouls. You can live at the line, live in the penalty. So, I think if the Wizards can go small and take advantage of that, I mean, that's the lineup that I think on Christmas Day is what killed the Celtics, that you go small and you try to take advantage of, you go like what it was Wall, Beal, Porter, Oubre, and Morris, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. That five can give the Celtics a lot of problems, because they can run, they can defend, they can, you know, and they can run the Celtics a little bit ragged. So if the Wizards don't do that, then great. I think the Celtics are, though, a little better constructed, and I'm really, really curious to see how or if Greg Monroe can be a matchup problem in a Wizards series. And Tuesday night, we'll really figure that out, because he'll get minutes, and who can guard Monroe on the Wizards? I mean, Markieff is too small. Monroe can shoot over the top of him. Gortat is too slow, and he won't be able to keep up with the spin moves anymore. Maybe Mahimi, but this could be an opportunity for the Celtics to kind of use Greg Monroe in a way that maybe people weren't expecting. He could be a wild card in this game and in a potential first-round series against the Wizards.
Absolutely. And it was Marcus Morris last game who was just toying with Oubre because he didn't have the strength to take him. And Marcus was hitting all of these, you know, like lower your shoulder, get better position, then just fade for one of those smooth fadeaways. And he was hitting that nonstop. And that was the lineup that was missing basically everyone. I think Jason Tatum was the only starter who was actually playing that game when it went to double overtime. So that'll be an interesting matchup. Who can guard Marcus Morris? Absolutely. Get your popcorn ready. It's going to be a game.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens, you know, and then if this does end up being a first round matchup, we'll end up talking again. We'll do a whole series preview.
By the way, John, I loved your basketball and music kind of podcast. I forgot who your guest was.
Oh,
was
really Darn cool Adams.
Personal history. Okay, Darn Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good to hear because, it you know, people don't – like Slam Magazine definitely is one of, like, the perennial integrators of those two. But I think just hearing your own personal experience about how when you were going out playing pickup outdoor in the summer and people would be – blasting, you know, these new songs you've never heard from before from the cars. That was just a really cool personal experience. So thanks for sharing that. That was
awesome. Yeah, that was great. Awesome. By the way, nice. Might as well plug it. You go back and search. It was me and Dart Adams. Search for the basketball and music podcast. That was awesome. Thanks.
Cool. Well, it was good talking to you tonight, John.
Okay, great conversation there with Noah Getzel of Locked On Wizards. You can follow Noah on Twitter at Noah_Getzel, GOETZEL, at Noah_Getzel. Of course, follow the Locked On Wizards podcast at Locked On Wizards. And subscribe to them, just like you should be subscribing to us, because you never know when you need to get your Wizards fix. I would recommend listening to the other team's Locked On podcast whenever the Celtics are playing another team, because you get some really good insight into what those guys are thinking. We tend to be caught up in our own stuff, and other teams see things differently. And even if they are super homers, you want to go hear what the super homer take is. You want to know what the other team is thinking, what the other fans are thinking. It's just good to know. So if you can fit their stuff in, go to the Locked On whatever team we're facing page and listen to their show. Check them out. So again, at Noah_Getzel, at Locked On Wizards. We are, of course, Locked On Celtics. If you are new to us, if you are a Wizards fan who's been listening to us, then please subscribe to us. Listen to us, just like I told Celtics fans to listen to you guys, because we have our own perspective on what's going to happen when the Celtics face the Wizards. Again, Tuesday night is a big deal. It's a huge game for the Celtics as far as keeping the Wizards at bay and keeping them in that eighth seed. I will be talking about this after the Celtics game on Locked On Celtics and on the Locked On NBA podcast, because I am doing the Wednesday night Locked On NBA podcast. So join me and Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans. We will have the full NBA recap, a big Tuesday night, a very important Tuesday night as far as standings go. We will talk about all of those games then. I will talk about the Celtics game after they play the Wizards. And of course, you should be subscribing to Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts. Search for Locked On Celtics there. If you are a subscriber, you know we need you to give us that 5-star rating and get that good review in there and share, spread the word, tell the people from the mountaintops. They should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.